This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 11:30. Coming up next, it's Art Focus with host Joseph Gallivan. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon College of Art and Crafts Studio School, offering classes and workshops for adults in book arts, ceramics, drawing and painting, fibers, metals, photography, and wood. www.ocac.edu/register.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
I'm Joseph Gallivan, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week our guest is Mary Weaver Chapin, Curator of Graphic Arts at the Portland Art Museum. She's here to talk about artist and book 100 Years, which is at Portland Art Museum through September the 1st. Welcome, Mary. It's lovely to have you here at KBOO.
Thank you, Joseph.
First, I think we should define what a artist book is.
Well, the term artist book is notoriously difficult to define. There are volumes just dedicated to that term alone, trying to pin it down. But I think an easier way to talk about it is that artist books exist along a continuum. So at one end are conventional bound books that you and I would recognize that have original artwork illustrating or accompanying a text. That's something that we would recognize easily. Now, if you go down that continuum, there's a more avant-garde edge where an artist book could be folded into an unusual shape, like a pinwheel you'll see in the exhibition, or a pyramid, or even in one case, wonderful round sheets of paper housed in a film canister. So in this exhibition, artist books range from just over a little more than 100 years, and you'll see everything from traditional illustrated books to really very imaginative, playful designs. But all of them are united by this interest in bringing original art to bear on this ancient form of the book or codex.
Mm-hmm. So the cover of the catalog has an image of the Eiffel Tower under construction in snow. It's the Henri Rivière series. So what is it about that?
Well, we're really
excited. Put it on the cover.
We're really excited to highlight this acquisition. It's a recent acquisition just of fall of last year. And it's also one of the earliest artist books in this exhibition. It's a great example because it shows you how many people were involved to bring this together. There's the artist, Henri Rivière. There was a publisher involved. Someone wrote, a very esteemed art critic at the time, wrote the prologue. And a very highly sought after Art Nouveau designer designed the typeface and the cover. And the object is, as the title suggests, 36 views of the Eiffel Tower, all color lithographs. And it was started in 1888, the year before the tower was finished. It was constructed for the 1889 World's Fair in Paris. And yet this project took Rivière many, many years, and the book was not published until 1902. So in the book, we get many different views of the tower from in the distance, up close, in the sun, in the rain, or as in this cover image, in the snow.
Who commissioned it? Was it to promote the World's Fair, or who was behind it?
That's a great question. As far as I know, it was Rivière who had the original idea to work on this. He was greatly inspired by Japanese prints, which were immensely popular in Paris at the end of the 19th century. And you may recall that there are Japanese precedents for this sort of thing, like Hokusai's 36 Views of Mount Fuji, in which that artist examined Mount Fuji from all these different moods and atmospheres and conditions. And so Rivière thought he would take on his own monument in Paris and explore that. So they're very beautiful, and help us, I think, rediscover the Eiffel Tower anew, seeing it in these half-form stages under construction, seeing it as a brand new modern monument. There's also a sense of nostalgia because by the time he finished this in 1902, the tower was slated to come down. It was meant to be a temporary structure for 20 years. And so by the time this was published, they were already talking about the plans for demolishing it. So you do have a hint of nostalgia as you go through the book.
And a book which really stands out for its form is the self-portrait in a convex mirror, which is a large, round, silver canister. It looks like a film canister. Maybe it was.
I believe it was a film canister. If you can picture it, it's a large film canister. I think the diameter is about 18, 19 inches, so a good size. And housed within the canister is a portfolio with text. The poem is by John Ashbery, his self-portrait in a convex mirror, a record, a phonograph, and eight prints by contemporary artists. And this was put together and published by Orion Press, a very significant artist books publisher in San Francisco. So we're delighted this work was acquired for this exhibition and purchased with money provided by the Contemporary Art Council of the Portland Art Museum.
Do you know how many of these were made?
I believe this was an edition of 150. So 150 sets of these were produced, and this is number 125 out of that set.
Who would have bought this? Would you be an Ashbery fan? Or
it's really interesting to talk to people who collect artist books, because some people buy them for the literature. So if it was perhaps a John Ashbery fan, others buy them because of the artist who is depicting the images. So this has a really great lineup. There's a Richard Avedon photo, Elaine de Kooning, William de Kooning, Jim Dine, Jane Freelicher, Alex Katz, and Arby Kate, and Larry Rivers. So people who are interested in art by those artists would be interested, people interested in his poem, and it's also really beautifully typeset. So anyone interested in letterpress and typesetting might be interested as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely a conversation piece. You'd get this out at a cocktail party and people would gather around and look at it, I think.
It's an exceptional piece, and Portland is very lucky. This is now the second example of this work in town. Reed College, in their special collections, owns this object as well. Mm-hmm. And they use it for teaching and have a really great book program over there.
Oh, okay. There's a book called Kane, which is in a wooden box.
The housing for Kane is also really significant. It is by the art is by Martin Puryear. And Kane is a very important African-American novel by Jean Toomer. And it was first published in 1923 and is considered one of the real highlights of the Harlem Renaissance. So to illustrate it, Martin Puryear made beautiful, beautiful woodcuts that suggest passages in the book. They're not representative, but they're very evocative.
But they're sort of abstract portraits of the women in the book, is
exactly,
that correct?
Exactly, yes. Abstract portraits of the main female protagonists. And then the box is a wooden slipcase created from four woods, and the woods are African winga, Swiss pear, American walnut, and sugar maple. And the colors of the woods represent the range of African-American skin tones. So it's a beautiful, beautiful object, and we're lucky to have that on loan from the Jordan Schnitzer Family Foundation for this exhibition.
Would that have been conceived as loose leaf? You know, do you know whether these artists know in the beginning how they're going to structure their book?
That's a really interesting question, how much of the artists know ahead of time what they're going to end up with. I think it really varies. Sometimes the publisher will come to them and say, this is what we're looking for, and we would like a bound book with 8 lithographs or, you know, 23 woodcuts. I think frequently it evolves as a conversation back and forth. I had the wonderful opportunity to speak with a local artist, Sarah Horowitz, about the book in her show, and she plans very, very carefully. She was able to show me mock-ups she did of the design, where she's considering everything from the placement of the text to exactly where the image will be on the page and how you move through the book. So I think these objects all require a great deal of planning. And it's just a question of how much is done far in advance and how much evolves during the process.
Mm-hmm. I'm Joseph Gallivan, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. Our guest is Mary Weaver Chapin, Curator of Graphic Arts at the Portland Art Museum. She's talking about Artist and Book 100 Years, which is at the museum through September the 1st. It's a show about artist books, and there are certain themes as well running through some of the books you've chosen.
There are a number of themes when you look at all the available literature in the world for artists to illustrate or work on. A couple of themes crop up again and again, and one is holy writings. So we have this magnificent book of Moses, Book of Genesis, by Jacob Lawrence that has beautiful, beautiful screen prints illustrating that first book of the Bible. And it's interesting because he doesn't try to illustrate things in an ancient motif or an ancient dress, but he draws on memories from the church he attended in Harlem in the 1920s. He was baptized in this church in the 1920s and evokes scenes from his memory, and it gives him a great power and reach. And next to that, we have a wonderful medieval bestiary that is, or I should say a modern adaptation of a medieval bestiary. And those were popular books in the Middle Ages in which animals were described and given attributes of moral attributes, so the reader would learn about proper behavior and moral conduct, or likening the animal to Christian attributes. So for this beautiful example, they took this ancient text with a new translation and a beautiful new art to go along with it.
Mm-hmm. So what is that one called?
Bishop Theobald's Bestiary of 12 Animals, and the artist is Rudy Pazzotti. But the text originally dates from the 11th century, and then here it is married with 12 lithographs and 10 woodcuts, and it's all housed in a beautiful clamshell box.
Mm-hmm. So somebody just, the artist would take that 11th century text and update it.
In this case, there was a new translation by a scholar. The Indiana University Press produced it. The artist selected the images, and then they were all put together. So it's really quite a complex process. Now, that's not even to get into all the difficulties of figuring out the housing, or, you know, what sort of box do you want it in? How do you want the binding sewn? And what sort of type will you use for the typesetting?
Mm-hmm. And there's a Haggadah?
Yes, by Ben Shahn. And that's a good example where the artist not only provided decoration and illustration for the book, but he actually hand wrote out all the Hebrew. So that's Shahn's handwriting you see. And another example of the artist writing out the text is in a beautiful book by illustrated by Henri Matisse. And it's poetry, French poetry from the 15th century. And that's all in Matisse's beautiful sort of looping hand. So it's a wonderful connection one feels to the artist.
Mm-hmm. Then there's Kandinsky, which is a pretty important piece.
That's right. The sort of the starting point for this exhibition is the wonderful artist book called Klänge, or Sounds, by Vasily Kandinsky. And it is one of the most important early books. So this was published in 1913. And Kandinsky was interested in the marriage between color and sound. And he thought of his works as sort of these little sound poems. So while sometimes artists will add their work to their artistic work to literature, in this case, Kandinsky not only made the images, but he also wrote these little prose poems about the color and sound and movement. And so in that way, he's really the author of the entire project.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very significant book. For this exhibition, we have 24 sheets from the book are framed individually and grouped together on the wall.
Mm-hmm. I get the feeling that artists do this work when they're quite well established. You know, it's kind of a luxury thing, and they're getting commissioned. They have a good reputation. They can take their time over it. Is that accurate, or do you find artists who are, you know, just starting out, they're also doing this?
I think you find artists just starting out working on these as well, but this is not a lucrative form of art making. And so I think you're absolutely right that it is something of a luxury. If you go back and read the history of the early artist books from the turn of the 19th into the 20th century, there are many, many beautiful artist books that were complete commercial failures. And in fact, the Riviere that we began with, the 36 views of the Eiffel Tower, he had hoped to publish 500. It says edition of 500. But it was such a bomb that we don't think that anywhere near that many were published. And it is nothing, it's no offense to Henri Riviere. It's a gorgeous book. But people didn't know what to do with them. You know, you can't hang it on the wall like a painting or a print. You don't want to just, you know, read it in bed the way you would a normal book. And so it has this sort of in-between status that some people find very difficult, and others, the fanatics, you know, love about it. So it's wonderful having the show up, because you see people who really care about artist books coming into the galleries and recognizing some things and really connecting with them. But I'm hoping the show will appeal to a broad audience, those who aren't entirely sure what to do with an artist book either.
These are the Codex people, right, who go to the show in the Bay Area?
Yes, Codex is a big forum for artist books, and Portland's really lucky to have a thriving book community. Now, I'm fairly new here, just a little bit over a year, but I have been so impressed with the people I've met at the different universities, at the Multnomah County Library, who are also interested and engaged in book arts and anxious to welcome someone new in.
Your title is Curator of Graphic Arts, and I think everyone knows that the Portland Art Museum has always had a really good print collection. So what is your role? Why is it now called Graphic Arts, and what do you do?
I'm in charge of all the prints in our collection. So I cover many centuries, from about the 15th century to the present. And prints can be in any media. They could be woodcuts, lithographs, etchings, engravings, screen prints, posters. So it's a wide variety of artist books, a wide variety of material, and all housed together in our special vault for works of art on paper. So they are light sensitive and temperature sensitive, so we give them the best possible treatment. And it's my role to research our collection, think about ways to organize it into exhibitions, and how to publish our collection. And then I also spend a good amount of time thinking about acquisitions and how to shape our collection for generations to come. You know, what should we be buying now? And making connections with people who can help us do that.
And having been there a year, I mean, have you looked at every single sheet of paper?
No, I have not seen everything. I'm working my way through the collection. I'm doing a two-pronged approach. One is I started with our oldest work and have started moving through the centuries by country. I started with the old German things first. And then my other approach is whenever I organize a show like this for the museum, I am dipping in and out of the collection in different places. So now I have a pretty good idea of our artist book collection. I started, one of my first shows was on mythological themes, and that got me into prints as old as, you know, 16th century to the present. So it takes years for a print curator to learn his or her collection just because of the way they're housed and the sheer numbers.
So the museum already had a bunch of artist books, but you had to gather more for the show.
Yes, the one thing that makes this show exciting is that there's so many objects in the show are recent acquisitions. So just since about 2008, I think we've had more than a dozen artist books come in, definitely more than a dozen. There are a dozen new books since 2008 in the show. And as so often happens, people will get word that, oh, you know, Portland's doing an artist book show or has an interest, and people will come forward with either donations or loans. So after my checklist was complete, I wasn't able to add anything more. A gentleman in the community came forward and said, oh, well, are you interested in this? And it was a beautiful artist book with screen prints by Jacob Lawrence. As is so often is the case, once the sort of you prick this little interest, you learn more and more about what's out there.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking of the strange forms. One of them is in the form of a pinwheel, right?
You
got that from Jim Carman at the Multnomah County Library?
Yes, I went to visit Jim Carman in the Special Collections, and he has a wonderful knowledge of artist books and a great passion for them. And he had two out to show me for my visit, and I fell in love with them both. The first is by Jessica Spring, and it is exactly as you say. It's a paper pinwheel mounted to what looks like a pencil. And what she's done is she's taken this paper form and used text from an ancient Greek author on each of the little wings of the wheel. And the base of the structure says, be in readiness for favorable winds. It takes this Chinese proverb. So she's very witty and brings it together in a fun way. And I haven't met the artist, but I believe she works in Tacoma, Washington.
Mm-hmm. And each of the four veins has a significance, is that right?
Yes, and so she it talks about the fourfold roots of everything. So it refers to the Greek gods who have different powers and dominion over different areas of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then another very inventive one from the Multnomah County Library is by Nora Lee McGillivray. And it's called Between Us and Far Away. And when you first see it, it forms a small pyramid. And then you can open up the sides of the pyramid. They fold down, and out springs this wonderful accordion fold that has words of various astronomers who are meditating on the heavens. So it's a very beautiful object, and it was a very difficult one to figure out how we were going to display.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to give it, and our first concern always is the care of the object of the book. So we didn't want to put any stress on hinges. We had to make special mounts to make everything just right. And in this case, one of our preparators was looking at it. I just had it set flat on the case, which was perfectly adequate, but rather boring. And he looked at it and he went away. And then he came back the next day with this perfectly ingenious mount. And I think you really get a much better sense for the object that way. And there were a number of people I should mention who were really outstanding this way. Our preparatory team is headed by Matthew Juniper, and then Stephen Short and Aaron Doyle also made really clever mounts. So I hope people will enjoy the hardware as well as the art as they go through.
There are some talks coming up. People want to learn a bit more, which are quite interesting.
Yes, the first talk coming up is on July 18th, and that is a special program for people 55 and over. It's a long-standing program at the museum called Art and Conversation. And it begins, it's a Thursday morning, it begins with a free coffee hour at 9:15, and then free admission into our lecture hall where I will give a talk at 10, and then the visitors are free to look around the exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm told that it has been going on for years at the Portland Art Museum, and the program is endowed by a former docent who really wanted to help share the museum with our community.
And then July 25th?
Yes, July 25th, I'm looking forward to doing a gallery talk that will be free with museum admission, and it will be sponsored by the Graphic Arts Council of the museum, which is a group that supports my work in acquisitions and exhibitions. It's a volunteer group. And we are inviting some special speakers. I have some invitations out, but I just heard back from Jim Carman, the curator of special collections at the Multnomah County Library, will be joining me, and we will focus on a handful of objects in the show and kind of go more in depth.
There's one about Little Red Riding Hood, which is quite remarkable. Could you just describe that?
There is a fabulous artist book on Little Red Riding Hood. It's a recent gift to the museum from a former curator, Donald Jenkins. And as you open the book, it's quite small. It's only about 5-6 inches high. It's an accordion fold. And the entire story is told with symbols, with dots. So each character, there's a key, each character has a dot. So Little Red Riding Hood is naturally red, and the Big Bad Wolf is black, and can't remember what color the grandmother is, but once you read the key, you figure it out, and then the entire story unfolds as you move through these sheets where you can see Little Red Riding Hood traveling through the forest, the sea of green, and then the wolf gets bigger and bigger and bigger as they approach. And I think by using a story that's so familiar to viewers and readers, the artist is able to translate it into this different idiom, and it becomes something very fresh and very engaging.
Mm-hmm. What is the future of this art form? You said it kind of took off, you know, 100 years ago, became very avant-garde. Where do you think it's going? Because a lot of people have just given up on books. They'll read everything on a Kindle now. And these are people with no nostalgia for books, you know. So where does this leave the book form?
Well, I'd like to think that the art book has a rich future. As you say that this is a whole new generation of electronic books. And I think the plus side is that there are a lot of people who are sort of swinging the other way. So here in Portland, we have people who care passionately about paper, handmade paper, and typesetting, and even the revival of the use of the typewriter, the fact that Portland was one of the most important places for the modern revival of calligraphy, gives me great hope that the book arts are strong here in our community. I think what we will see is, again, more and more sort of unusual forms. So this exhibition really looks at sort of the more traditional side of the artist book. But if you were to visit, say, the Reed College Special Collections Library or the Multnomah County Library, you can see that people are really coming up, moving in different directions and different shapes. Books are becoming very, very sculptural and three-dimensional.
Do you think there could be such a thing as an electronic artist book?
I think there might be. I can't imagine that I would be a huge fan of that. I like something you can touch and feel. And one of the pleasures of these books is that they, unlike most art, they were meant to be held. And so some of them have just absolutely luxurious leather bindings that are just so soft. Or the wood, being able to feel the wood of the Martin Puryear cane. There are a lot of sensual pleasures built into these. The feel of the paper. A lot of them have extremely fine paper or have put a lot of thought into the paper and the binding. So I'm hoping these tactile pleasures will keep the traditional book form alive.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's an amazing show, and you do kind of want to, like, tear the plexiglass off and get your hands on them, but you can't. So I'm Joseph Gallivan, and this is Art Focus on KBOO Radio. This week, our guest was Mary Weaver Shapin, Curator of Graphic Arts at the Portland Art Museum. The show Artist and Book 100 Years is on at PAM now through September the 1st. And it's downstairs as you come in the main entrance, down the stairs on the left. It's underground. Don't miss it. Thank you very much for coming in, Mary.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all. Andy Warhol, let's just scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
The first annual Jim Pepper Native Arts Festival will take place Wednesday, August 7th and Saturday, August 10th at Park Rose High School Performing Arts Center, 12003 Northeast Shaver Street, Portland. Jim Pepper was born in Salem, Oregon and lived in the Portland area for many years. A jazz saxophone composer and singer of Native American ancestry, he became a pioneer of fusion jazz in the late 1960s. This event is sponsored by KBOO Community Radio and the Oregon Cultural Heritage Commission. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Do you love listening to KABU? Want to get involved in the great programming you hear? Become a volunteer. KABU's volunteer orientation will be Tuesday, August 6th at 6 p.m., located at Southeast 8th and Ankeny in Portland. Questions can be directed to Ani at 503-231-8032, extension 213, or by email at volunteer@kabu.org.
Alolena Choreta, sota pek. Alolena Choreta.
Buenas tardes, tengan todos ustedes, bienvenidos aquí a Buscando América, sustituyendo a nuestra buena amiga Carmen, Alejandro Ceballos, para servirles. Aquí voy a estar en cabina. Y bueno, esta tarde vamos a escuchar dos discos que acabo de, dos o tres discos.